This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Shug McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Tom Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oakland.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Alone with 7 Derby wins.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Bob Baffert stands alone. Those words would apply to several major stakes races from coast to coast, but certainly when it comes to the world's most famous horse race, one man does indeed stand alone. Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert, now with 7 wins in the Run for the Roses, passing Plain Ben Jones for most victories all time. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next hour. You are tuned in live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're listening to the free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show on our HRN website, horseracingradio.net. You know, this show is referred to as the show trainers listen to, and today I think you're going to realize exactly why it has earned that slogan. Please join me in welcoming 7-time Kentucky Derby winning trainer Bob Baffert to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Bob, appreciate the visit, and congratulations again, my friend.
Oh, thank you. It was just an exciting day, just unbelievable, and just, you know, things worked out right all day long. We had a tough Friday, but you know, this business, you just got to keep on going and things will change. And I'm still flying high. It was just an incredible weekend, and I'm just so happy for all my connections, all my people that work for me, my crew. It was just a team effort, and it's just unbelievable.
You said you're still flying high. You're no stranger to this feeling. You've experienced it 6 other times previous. Does it take you a while to come down off of this this rush?
Well, this was different because, you know, when most of the time I go in there, I sort of expect it a little bit. And this, with this little horse, I just wasn't really – I just didn't know if he was good enough. And we were trying to figure out, how could we make them better? We had to find, you know, 4 lengths. And but he had been training so well, and he was looking good, and put on some weight. And when he came into the paddock, he looked so good. You could just tell he was on it. His hair, his body language really tipped me off. Actually, the 2 horses, their body language tipped me off that day. It was him and DuJour. They look unbelievable in the paddock. And so, we thought, well, we're just going to put him on the lead and just see how far he can take him and hope that his heart will take him, you know, the extra yardage, you know. And so, you know, we left the gate. Everything was good. Around the turn, he was in a good spot. Johnny had him in a great spot. And that was standing in the paddock. Usually I stand in the paddock by myself, but this year I was joined by, I had Todd Pletcher to my left with his group, and I had John Sadler and the Aronas. They were behind me, so we were sort of in between. And when the gate came open, I heard John Sadler say, "We got left." And so I thought, that's not good in the Kentucky Derby, especially a horse like that. And all of a sudden, we're on the lead, and there's no rock your world. So that's the thing about, you need the luck. You know, you got to get away, need the trip to get away from there. And we were in a good spot, and I saw the gray horse soup and sandwich. We thought he'd be up there. And down the backside, that's probably the first time that I felt pretty good, because he was doing it. He was had his ears just going back and forth, and Actually, I was talking to Todd Pletcher afterwards, and he said when he saw him going down the backside, he says, "You looked really live." That's when I first started looking live, because he was enjoying himself. And the horse is out there just cruising along, but he wasn't going slow. He still went 23 flat and 46 and change. But the way he was doing it, he was just doing it really. It was in a nice rhythm. And when you can get a horse with a nice rhythm like that, that means they're breathing well. Nothing's, you know, they're enjoying it. Then when he turned for home, I saw Mandolin Bay looked like he was loaded behind us. And when he whipped out outside, I thought, oh, here he comes, because I was really worried about Mandolin Bay. I loved his works coming up. Of all the works, Mandolin Bay's works were like, they looked really, really great. And then I see the gray horse, the Godolphin horse coming.
Central Quality.
Central Quality. Oh, he's going to loop us. Here he comes, you know. And so, and we turned for home. I was still not a believer. I was waiting for those horses to come get us. And at the eighth pole, he was still in there, hanging in there tight and fighting. And the Mandolin Bay, you could tell he was just having trouble. He just couldn't get by him. And the horse, the Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie. I wasn't sure that was Hot Rod Charlie. I knew I was just watching the Godolphin horse. And until the 16th pole is when I thought, wow, I've got a chance to win this. And you're just saying, please, don't do all this hard work and just get beat on the wire. I've been there too many times. It's just the worst feeling. And for him to just kick in, I remember we were that last 100 yards. We were just screaming, yelling, and when he hit the wire, it was just an unbelievable feeling that he did it, and he beat those, and it was a good race. I mean, there was all four horses right there in line, because this year, the Derby was it was hard to really separate them all. They were all so close to each other, and, I've never seen that in the Derby, but, I just feel so blessed. It was just, I really appreciate this one probably more so. It felt like the Silver Charm Derby where, you know, I was counting on the horse's heart and grit to get him there. And that's what happened. You know, but he's a pretty good horse. I mean, he's a good horse. And he showed us something, a dimension that I didn't know he had, which is an extra gear. And so it's just, you know, unbelievable feeling. Johnny V again, what a strong, great rider. Got him there. He actually had more faith in him than I did the night before, because for two nights in a row we were figuring out a game plan. And he said, "Bob, is he doing better than last time?" "Oh, he's doing a lot better. We have a chance then. If you've got him, if he's doing better than last time, the last time he just didn't really feel like the horse I rode the time before." I said, "He couldn't be doing any better. He's doing the best." He says, "Then we have a chance." He says, "I'm going to put him in a race, and if somebody wants to go ridiculous fast, then we'll let him. But I'm just going to give him his head," and it just worked out. You know, it just, you know, you need the trip in the Derby, and we got the trip, and those other horses ran big. You know, you're just hoping that your horse shows up.
Yeah, he was all heart. He held off all challengers. He had to fight for it. And like you said, he didn't go slow early. The fractions were honest enough, and he had to battle all the way through. Kurt Becker, who was doing the broadcast with me on the radio side of things, Bob, pointed out after the race that this was very reminiscent of what we saw from Authentic last year. It was the same type of trip. Get him on the front and hold off all challengers, and Medina Spirit was able to do it in the same fashion.
Yeah, and Authentic had to do it from the 18th hole or something, yeah. And he had to make his maneuver. He had to maneuver all the way down there, and that was like the most masterful Derby ride I've ever had. I've had some good ones, but Johnny V last year to do that move and sort of surprise everybody from the outside. You know, he had mapped out this, and he waited to the last minute till he got by the wire to go ahead and make his move and just cross over and get in front of everybody, and. And it just, you know, but we just weren't sure this horse was coming off two losses. But my son Bodie and Johnny V had a lot of confidence. My son Bodie said, "Dad, every time you run second in the Santa Anita Derby, you win the Derby." So I was looking for any kinds of positive things. I said, all right, buddy. And he told me, like, we get a chance, you know. And so, but the reason with me, I go in, and I don't like to have too high expectations. And I keep everybody sort of mellowed out because the disappointment is worse. You know, when you have the favorite, I've gone in there with the heavy favorites and you get beat or they don't show up. Like Cavaneer, that's the most horrible beat. So I came in there sort of like Cavaneer. I'm hoping to light the board. Maybe he'll run well. And then when he took the lead, I'm thinking, like, you've got to, get him across the finish line. And he did. And actually, they really didn't get by him. He galloped out. You know, he kept on galloping out strong. And wasn't as tired as I thought he would be after that race. So, and we caught a fast track, which is really, you know, important too, because sometimes that track can be demanding. And so it was just everything has to work out for the Derby, and it did.
You know, I called out to Castleton Lions earlier today and had a talk with those folks and talked to them about their stallion Britannico, who is the sire of Medina Spirit. You know, here's a stallion that is not Tappet. He's not Curlin. Medina Spirit wasn't highly regarded when he went through the auction ring. Do you remember the first time you laid eyes on Medina Spirit?
Well, I mean, I got a call from Amr Zidane, and he told me his friend who owned Medina, they grew up together in Medina, and he says, please have your guys look at this horse. I think, he didn't bring a lot, but I think he's a good horse. You know, he's promoting his horse. So he asked me, look, I'm looking at him. I watched the video. I said, he's fast. He's not going to bring a lot of money, but he's fast. I would say get him. And Gary Young was there, and Gary said, he couldn't really knock him. So that's how he got him. And so we have him at Los Alamitos and looked at him. He's a nice-looking horse. He's not a little horse. I call him a little horse. He's about 16-1. But he's a light-framed horse, but he's made right. He's got a great neck and shoulder and his hind end and everything, but he's more of a lean type of horse, more like like authentic, you know, that. And those kind of horses are a lot easier on themselves because they don't carry that extra weight like a Justify. And so, but when I had him down there, all of a sudden, Mike Marlowe, who's my assistant that runs he has all the materials when they come in, he said, you know, and he doesn't really know the breeding on all those horses. They just go in there and he just trains them all. They go to the same program. And he said, you know, this horse, I got a horse here that's, looks like he's okay. He could be something. I go, which one is it? He's by Britannico. He says, oh, yeah, they gave $35,000 for him. Well, he can forget about how much they gave for him. I think he could be a serious horse. And he said that, wow, really? And so, you know, we got him here, and then we sent him to San Diego, got him ready, and we knew he was going to be a good horse. And he broke his maiden first out, and in his second out, I threw him in there with Life is Good, and that was a little tough. But he ran one of his better races against Life is Good. He's close to him. He got the closest to Life is Good in that race. And then he came back and won the next one, put him on the lead. And so, and then the other two races, he was, you know, behind there. He fought well, but I didn't want to send him out of town. I could have sent him out of town. I think he could have won a major prep. But Mr. Zidane, he kept saying, look at Bob, I don't care what you do, but I want to win the Kentucky Derby. I want you to have him at his best for the Kentucky Derby. So I told him the only way I can do that is if I don't ship him. If I ship him, it can take, you know, he'll get light on me or whatever. It's a bit hard on him. And if I keep him here, he's going to have to run against Life is Good, these good horses. But, you know, he'll be ready for the Derby. He'll have enough points. Don't have to worry about it. And he was fine with that. So it's nice when you have a client like Amr who's, you know, respects the trainers. You know, we have mutual respect for each other. And he's a super cool guy. I mean, he loves the horses. He was part of California Chrome. He bought into him after the Derby. And I ran into him at the in Dubai Airport Lounge when I went over to run McKenzie and Mucho Gusto in the Saudi Cup. And we ran into him. We talked for a few hours waiting for our flights. And he said, you know, I want to get back. If I get in, can I, would you train for me? And I said, sure, you know. So I'm thinking I'm getting back in. And who would have thought, you know, he brought Princess Noor, nice filly, won a grade one with her, a couple grade ones. And now she's, they're bringing her to in a mischief. Beautiful filly. But and he wins the Derby. It's just unbelievable story.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Talking with Hall of Fame trainer, 7-time Kentucky Derby winner. That's Bob Baffert. Bob, you set your sights now on the Middle Jewel, the Preakness Stakes in Baltimore. You've won that race 7 times. You are tied for most wins in the Preakness, and of course a win, and you'll stand alone in that one. I can't even imagine what goes through your mind when you hear those words, when you hear somebody refer to you as the all-time leader in the history of the Derby, and now maybe even the Preakness too. What do you think when you hear those words?
Well, I really don't get too caught up in it. You know, we live in different times, and, you know, everything's different. But I didn't get there. I got there with good horses. I had the clientele. And plus I had the people around me, my assistants, the gallop boys, the grooms. Everybody works hard. So it's a group effort. It's a team effort. And I feel very lucky and blessed that we did it. But we work hard. You know, we put a lot of hours into it. I've had to make a lot of sacrifice with the family. My wife, Jill, you know, she's with me there. She's endured the highs and lows, and things aren't going well. You know, she feels the same way as I do. And that's why when her horse, Du Jour, won that turf race, that was like winning the Kentucky Derby. That was so exciting. And she was so excited, and what she has to go through with me, I was so happy for her. She was so giddy, and it was exciting. And so it's one of those things where, and especially on a big day like that, you do it in front of, you know, the fans at Churchill Downs where everybody's watching, and to win that. So I just feel lucky and blessed. And to go in, you know, last year I really thought we could win the Preakness, and we got beat by a filly that was just ran an incredible Preakness. I mean, I hated to be on the losing end, but it was great for racing. I mean, you know, the girls beat the boy. I mean, it was I couldn't believe it. You know, I'm watching the stretch and I'm thinking, okay, boy, come on, get by her now. You got to get by her. And she wouldn't let. I mean, Swiss Skydiver. It was a thrilling race, and it was, you know, unfortunately, I got beat, but I had a lot of respect for her, and she beat me, you know, on the square. And so, actually, when I went back to the barn, I went up to her. I said, I got to see this filly. I got to get a closer look at her, you know. Sweet filly, and we got beat. But that's what makes racing so interesting, you know. There's stories like that. And Kenny McPeak, you know, he did an unbelievable job with her. And we were all stable there together. That's what I love about Pimlico. We're all stable together, and we get to see our horses up close, and the Derby pressure's off, and so now we're second leg, everybody's there to have a good time, and the only time of year I eat crab cakes, you know, I get my crab cakes, and so it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
It's funny, as I was getting ready for our Derby coverage, Bobby, you know, you had the 6 wins, and I started looking at other major athletes and coaches that had won 6 titles or championships, and it goes all the way back to, say, Newt Rockne, who guided Notre Dame to 6 national titles, and Bear Bryant had 6 at Alabama. Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, each won 6 NBA titles. But then there are others that have won even more than 6 in their respective sports. You know, Tom Brady comes to mind most recently with 7. But you had a chance on NBC's television coverage to visit with Bill Belichick, and Mike Tirico led the interview, and I thought it was highly entertaining. He said that you got more out of Bill Belichick in that short interview than most reporters will ever get from him. What was that like?
Well, first of all, when you have a guy like Mike Tirico, who is such a, you know, he's got a happy voice. He's interesting, and he can disarm you. He's very good at that. And, we were very relaxed. I know Coach Bill, he's I've got to hang out with him, with Gasol Kumin. He's his good friend of his. He brought him to, down to Preakness. We had dinner together for the Justify Triple Crown run, and I got to know him a little bit. And so, you know, you get him away from the football, and we're talking horses. You know, he's a different kind of guy. And we did that interview. I didn't know what to expect, but you know, I asked him a question because we were, you know, what? And I asked him, "Do you ever go through a point in the year where you just say to yourself, because this is it happens to me every year, I'll go through a moment where I say, you know what? I should have been a farmer or done something else. You know, I don't know about this race. I'm just it's so, you know, you might get down on it or get a little bitter or whatever, and then all of a sudden, the next day, like, what was I thinking, you know? And then I asked him that. He says, yes, I do. You get a bad beat, or they don't play well, you're down, you get beat, or you lose a game, whatever. And I said, how long does it last? Oh, it lasted a few hours. I'm okay. But it was just something like that, because when you play at that level, and so much is expected of us, you know, you're expected to win, and you've been there, and you feel that extra, you put that pressure on yourself. And if I hadn't had a horse in the Derby, you know, well, where's Bob Baffert? He's got these millions of dollars worth of horses. He's not here, you know. And then I show up with a $35,000 horse, you know, it's like, well, that's, you know, it's like, that's not good. And, but it was really, you know, he goes, in order to play at that level, we have to work. We have to work hard. We have to work constantly to stay at that level. But he enjoys it. And the reason we do it is he said he enjoys it. And that's the number one reason. That's why I enjoy coming. I don't consider it a job. I get to work outdoors. I get to work with these outstanding athletes like he does. And it's a joy for me. But it can make you bitter. It can make you stressful. It's not all going to be happy every day. We have horses get injuries, and what we went through last year with all those contamination positive, it was tough. You know, I actually did stand alone last year because nobody wanted to talk to me. But it was, and finally, I got all that behind me, and I really got to enjoy the Derby this year because I went in there. It was nice. I was under the radar. It was so nice to be under the radar and enjoy the week and get into the festivities. The trainer's dinner was a lot of fun. Everybody was good. Everybody was funny. Even Chad Brown was hilarious. And so it was, you know, it was a time where everybody could just let down and have a good time. It was a good week.
Down to about the final 4 or 5 minutes before I have to get to the commercial break, Bob, but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up your Triple Crown winner and now Hall of Famer, American Pharoah, the news being announced earlier today that he would be inducted later this summer in Saratoga Springs. Boy, what a tremendous accomplishment that is for both you and for American Pharoah.
Yeah, I mean, American Pharoah, he brought racing back to life. I mean, we know we always, you know, 37 years, that is the greatest sports event that I've ever been to. I've been to some big sports events. It was almost like, to me, I was there when Kirk Gibson hit the home run at Dodger Stadium. It was that same feeling where he made us feel so good that night. And American Pharoah, everybody was there to see him win. And when he came down that stretch and that roar, I'll never forget, it was so loud. It was deafening, you know, and it kept going on and on and on. And it was that feeling of like, we got to watch greatness happen before our eyes. We've been waiting and waiting all those years. And it wasn't about Bob Baffert. It wasn't about Victor Spinoza. It was about American Pharoah. The Triple Crown is about the horse. He put himself in an elite group. And there's not a more deserving horse to go in than him. And not only that, he was a people's horse because he loved human contact. I could bring kids to come up to pet him and touch him. He loved humans, you know. And He didn't care. And I went to see him, Jill and I, we went to see him the other day. He's the same thing. He's a sweetheart. He's like a big teddy bear, and he looked unbelievable. It's the best I've ever seen him look. I mean, I was like, I said, can I borrow him for a couple of days and take him down to Churchill Downs, stick him in the gate, you know? And, but, I mean, horses like that, they just don't come around, you know, him, Justified, you know, and Arrogate. They're just so superior. And I just feel blessed that, you know, I had him. I had him in my barn. I didn't have to run against him. He was just a competitor. His mechanics were just unbelievable, you know. And so, and to be in the Hall of Fame, I'm so proud of him and everybody. And the Zayats. The Zayats were, you know, they were great, and they were everybody. It was just, it was a fun ride, you know. And so I'm happy for all the connections.
Yeah, thanks for that trip down memory lane, too, as you were talking about the roar and the party atmosphere and you know, what it meant and the atmosphere at Belmont Park. I was thinking back to where we were standing. You know, we were hosting the coverage on the radio here, and I could feel the – we were up top above the finish line, at one level above where Larry Colmus called the race, and I could feel the ground almost shaking underneath. It was – to describe it is really hard to do, Bob, to put that into words, but I know exactly what you're talking about. It was it was just a very special moment, and he was a special horse, and you and the team and American Pharoah just took everybody on one hell of a ride, and it's so great to see him get in. 2 minutes left. Todd Pletcher also gets in. I know that you and Todd have gone up against each other, but also had a respect and been friends for years. Great to see Todd Pletcher get in, too.
Todd Pletcher, and I mean, not only is he a great trainer and a great competitor, but he handles himself so professionally. He really, the way he's great for the sport. You know, he's just a true gentleman. His family were old quarter horse people, and he went to the U of A like I did. Believe me, he didn't learn from the U of A. Like, you know, he's just a true horseman. You know, he comes from that background, and he handles himself so, and he represents racing at the highest level. And I'm so happy for him. And he was definitely a shoe-in. I mean, there was no way he could not get in. I'm happy for him, and because every time I look at a race, when you see a Todd Pletcher horse in there, you go, uh-oh. You know he's one of the guys you got to beat. And where did he come from? The greatest trainer of all time, in my eyes, Wayne Lucas. Because I've been chasing him since the quarter horse days. And I'm just so happy for Todd and his family. And his parents are going to be so proud of him. That was the biggest thrill for me, is being on that podium. And my parents were there, and they stood up. And to me, those proud parents, it was one for them. And the love, my father's love for horses, and like his dad, the love for horses, that's why we're in the Hall of Fame.
Very well said. Bob Baffert, I know a lot of people look up and see your name in the program when they're in a race, and they don't like to see that either because they know they're in trouble. Wonderful comments on Todd Pletcher and American Pharoah. And Bob, again, congratulations on your accomplishment in the Kentucky Derby. Go get it done in Baltimore, and we'll look forward to the next chapter of Bob Baffert.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, thanks so much. Bob Baffert here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Just spectacular. If you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast. Coming up next, a special encore presentation of that conversation that you just heard in the first half of the show. I'll replay the entire thing in the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Fasig Tipton is bringing the heat to Miami with the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale of selected two-year-olds in training. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale will be held on March 31st after the Florida Derby over Gulfstream Park's dirt racetrack.
The Sal has a history of producing the sport's very best horses, including last year's Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Nadal, as well as top horses Bellafina, Dona Veloce, Yapin, and Share the Ride. You will find no higher concentration of quality in any two-year-old sale in 2021. The Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 31st at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?